Welcome to The Waggle, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
That's right, it is The Waggle podcast, and fans, this podcast each and every week is brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips. They're known for their sports clips, MVP haircut experience, massaging shampoos, hot steam towels, which is my favorite part, and plus the sports are on TV, hockey, baseball, basketball, and of course, football and legendary haircuts. You can book your appointment online for one of those legendary haircuts at sportclips.ca. That's sportclips.ca. This podcast is also known for being hosted by Davis Sanchez and myself, Donovan Bennett. But Sanchez is probably at a Sport Clips right now, getting cleaned up, so he looks good on his vacation with his family. So with me is Brody Lawson, who everyone knows CFL fans alike from her work on Game Time, for her working out on the grind, and now you are bringing your talents to the Waggle. Overdue. Thank you, Brody.
Long time listener, first time caller.
First time caller.
Yeah, my first time on the Waggle ever. Yes. This is exciting.
Oh well, it is exciting for me too. Hopefully not your last time caller.
No, and
we'll
after
make sure this is a good experience.
Yeah, and after a good weekend of football, I'm like, let's get going.
Yes,
let's talk about it. Mark's Labor Day weekend was a time. DJ, and in your family, I know allegiances are a little split.
Yes. So for the uninitiated who have no idea what Brody's talking about, I grew up in an Argos family. I grew up in Toronto, city kid. Entire family were double blue fans. My wife, Kate McKenna, did not grow up in Hamilton. She grew up in Oakville, but her family's from Hamilton. Her entire family are Tiger Cats fans. Her father is a Tiger Cats season ticket holder. She at one point worked for the Tiger Cats. And at my wedding, there was some Oski Wee Wee chants going on. My father-in-law made me wear a Tiger Cat hat at one point.
Guys, it's so good, all
there
of this.
There was some Argos chants from my side of the family going back and forth. The rivalry literally went down at my wedding. That's how big the rivalry is in the CFL.
And we love it because anytime a rivalry plays out on the field or amongst fans, we're like, we live for it at the CFL. So anyway, Donovan and Kate had their gorgeous little baby not that long ago. And it took us a while at the CFL to get our stuff together and get them a baby gift. We finally did. And we thought it would be fun to open it right now on the Waggle. It's wrapped in a beautiful cardboard box, which I'll pass over to you, my friend.
This is not obviously a visual medium, but I'm
no,
like,
we know, we understand that. We're going to describe
I'm sweating right now. Like I am nervous to open this. Should I do the
honors? I think you should open it. I'll try and do the play by play.
Okay.
Go for it.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Okay. There's a smile. There's a smirk.
There is. As part of said box. So okay. What we have here, and I love the number. We have a new era. Shout out to league sponsor, league partner, I should say, jersey with an Argos little, oh my goodness, Bennett on the back, number 13, which was my college number. I don't know if that was, that had to be.
Oh yes, it was. Oh my goodness. Know that.
And then. You guys are killing me. And then there's another new era, Tiger Cats jersey with 77, which was my wife's soccer number. She was a goalie, which doesn't make it right because 77 is a bad number in anything, in hockey, in football. Old linemen don't even want to wear 77.
I don't care. It was Kate's number. It's a 77. We're going with it.
It's terrible, but the jersey is black and gold. It's Tiger Cats, which makes it also terrible. I do have an observation, though.
Go for it.
I mean, I am a journalist. I love to observe. So the Argos jersey is 12M. I assume that's, you know, 12 months, a year.
Right.
The Tiger Cats jersey is 18M.
Yes.
So that would be older.
Right.
What are you trying to imply? That after a year of being an Argos fan, he's going to ditch the double blue and go for the black and gold. Is this what I'm supposed to take from this? Because I'm not happy.
Look, I will say, I didn't order these. I take zero responsibility. It was Jonathan Rubinoff and Chris.
Oh, you're just throwing others
under
the bus.
No, but he was concerned that they were different sizes. But I still think, I think it's all good. He can still wear, I mean, guys, these are tiny little baby jerseys. The 18-month is barely bigger than the 12-month. Like, I think you could squeeze him in.
I think that the real commentary
is what?
It may have been conscious or unconscious, that the average Tiger Cat fan is bigger than the average Argo fan. And that's why the Tiger Cat jersey, of course, is bigger. No, this is awesome. Thank you so much. His grandfather is going to love this. His uncle my brother, who actually worked for both teams, is going to love this.
Pretty cute.
Thank you. The real question is, which one is he going to choose?
I don't know, man. You've got a ways to go.
So if anyone has a newborn, and actually one of the producers of this very show and our productions here at the CFL, Kyle Scott, has a newborn.
Totally. Shout out to him. Shout out to the Scott fam.
You know that, like, keeping a baby away from screens is so tough. Like,
okay.
Computers, iPads, TVs, their eyes just fixate on them. And I'm glad that I was able to keep my young son away from the screen when we were watching the Labor Day Classic. Because if he saw the third and fourth quarter, he would be a Ticat fan, right? So I'm glad he's just, if he did catch a glimpse, he wasn't really understanding what he was watching. Should we start there?
Cause yeah.
Because it was...
We should definitely start there.
It was bad.
It wasn't great.
Well, I mean, I guess it's... Depends on...
It started well for Argos fans, but I think it was like maybe a little too soon after what had happened the week before.
Are they like trying to set a Guinness Book of Records for ways to lose a football game? Like a guy's foot just barely is out of bounds after a missed field goal, lose that way up big, lose, get blown out, come back, lose. I mean, Argos fans are used to them losing. This is the 9th time out of 10 games that they've lost.
Right.
This is what would hurt. Theoretically, if you're an Argos fan, man, Dylan Wynn is just getting after the quarterback. You're going
to
talk to him.
I'm going to talk to him
later.
Yep.
Former Argo.
Argo
said, yeah, you know what? We don't need your presence on the interior of the defensive line. You could be zero technique, one technique, three technique. Not a lot of guys who can do that. Peace. Goes down the QEW, finds employment. Braylon Addison had a nice training camp, a nice time with the Argos, did some things in some preseason games. Was lower down depth chart. Don't need you. Surplus for requirements, even though you were great at Oregon.
Yeah, see ya. Goodbye.
Not only does he stick with the Tigercats.
Yeah.
Tasker out, no problem. He becomes a number one receiver and kills them. All of his touchdowns this year. Against who?
Oh my, I didn't realize
the
that.
Double.
Come on.
Five, yeah. So, okay. You know what?
Who else?
Dane Evans. Man, was he a former Argo? No. But he had a lot of time to throw. Comfortable in the pocket. Oh my God. Was it Chris Van Zyl who was just being a monster on the offensive line? Let's look over to the special teams. Special teams has been an issue for the Argos. They've lost lots of games, not just this year, last year, on missed field goals. Who? I can't remember. It was the last time they won a Grey Cup, there was a big kick in the snow. That's right. Liram Hirilahu, former Argo. Now, you're not going to pay him, Jim Pop. He's going to get paid in Hamilton. Oh, who's paying him in Hamilton? That would be Jim Barker, former Argo GM, who now, for some reason, God love Jim, is wearing a headset on the sidelines.
On the sidelines.
As an executive. Unprecedented, but clearly it's working. And the guy who's running the team wearing a headset, Orlando Steinhauer, former Argo player, former Argo coach, and someone the Argos were interested in. And he leveraged that to say, all right, I love you, Gene Jones, but I need to be the head coach here, or else I'll be the head coach elsewhere. That's how good I am. And clearly it's worked out because the Ticats have their best record since the last time they were in the Grey Cup. And they have the best record in the league. The fact that there were so many former Argos doing the damage in Hamilton, for Hamilton, I think was the worst part of this.
It would not be good for Argos fans to watch that play out. It's gotta hurt. Do they have extra intel? I always wonder about what about the big Bristol board that was on the sidelines in Calgary?
Yes.
Like, does it mean anything?
I don't know.
Is it just that the team's bad and Hamilton is just that much better?
I there's something to that.
But as for Chris Van Zyl, I'm thinking specifically as center.
Yeah, but he's a guy who the Argos are saying, man, he's getting up there in age. The longer you play, obviously, as a Canadian, the more you ask for in terms of money. Can we go younger at the position? But what is it about Hamilton that was able to say, well, Hirilahu, yeah, we'll pay you. Chris Van Zyl, we'll pay you. But also, we'll put you in positions to succeed. And the fascinating part about this, and you know because you spend time with these guys in the off season, mm-hmm. whether it's covering them or training with them and watching them train, is that these guys are all living in the same neighborhoods,
right.
Living in Mississauga, Oakville, Burlington, areas in between mm-hmm. the two. And so they leverage that fact saying, well, I may sign a contract to Toronto or Hamilton, but I don't have to uproot my life, my family.
Totally.
And so in the offseason, even though they're bitter rivals, a lot of these guys train together because there's so many of them in this area. And I think the two front offices know that as well.
Totally. This league is just full of guys constantly jumping from team to team. But between the Argos and the Ticats, you're right. If you can keep your family in one place and not have to pick up and move, you're going to just sign with the other team down the QEW. So you're right. There's even more crossover between those two teams, I think, than probably any other team in the league. I don't numbers on that, but it seems to be that way.
Yeah, just unfortunately, the positive stories are going west right. on the QEW, right. not east.
Right.
The other thing, though, fascinates me in terms of the proximity of all these guys and how close they are. Sometimes, you know, proximity could bleed contempt. Has there been a Labor Day Classic in right. Hamilton where there hasn't been a fight? Well, there hasn't been a brawl. Like, Wilder Jr.
No.
and Simone Lawrence are fighting at the bottom of the pile. I'm pretty sure they've trained together in the offseason. These guys have.
All of them do.
Dwayne Ford.
There's like three gyms they all work out at.
Yes. Dwayne Ford, who actually is a veteran of going back and forth between these teams.
Yeah.
He made his name and his money in Calgary, but towards the end of his career played for the Argos and the Cats. He told a great story on the broadcast. Orlando Steinhauer, coach of the Argos, played for the Argos at a time where I think it was Archie Emerson got cut from the Argos, went to the Tiger Cats. They were roommates, mm-hmm. and in the Labor Day Classic, they got in a fight.
No.
And then they had to, I suppose, go home, if not together, but to the same house. But that's what it's like where these guys are so close. I understand this because anyone who has a sibling knows that the sibling rivalry is real.
It's a real thing.
You will literally fight with your sibling the way you would not with anybody else. And to me, this is the CFL's greatest sibling rivalry.
Right. That's a really good analogy, actually.
Thank you.
But to your point, this is one thing that's always confused me, and I need some player feedback. Maybe I'll ask Dylan about this later on. But Davis will always say rivalries are for the fans, not for the players. Mm-hmm. And they do all these interviews for TSN and for the media the week before, and they're like, there's something special about it. There's, you know, there's a different feeling. And then you talk to players and they're like, nah, like it's another game. They say it's all crap. And yet, two ejections. Like,
and could have been more.
Could have been more. Was chippy all game. I think the other two games I'm remembering, Edmonton and Calgary for sure. Like a similar amount of heat.
Mm-hmm.
So there is something to these rivalries, whether it's the fans that are just so rowdy that the guys or teams are desperate and they're not doing well, and that desperation breeds more physicality, or the smack talk is that much worse. Like, I have never played CFL football, so I don't know. But that surprised me too.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing too, both of these teams know that the Argos probably not making the playoffs. But if you win the Labor Day Classic, Your season is not a success, but it's not as much of a failure as it could be. Both these teams know that this is more than just one win in the standings and you know, a couple points for the good. The other thing, too, for me, when you look at the game in Saskatchewan, the game in Calgary, the game in Hamilton, going to go out on a limb and say that the fans were well lubricated, that they were probably day drunk. At Tim Hortons Field, I'm not sure how many people were doing, you know, double doubles of coffee in their hand. I think they're doing double shots. And when the fans are so rowdy and literally like they're at the Coliseum, they're like frothing at the mouth. I do think that puts the players in a frenzy where you're ready to risk it all. S.J. Green, who's like one of the most
level-headed,
nice, mild-mannered, humble people, he's losing the do-rag, he's losing the helmet, he's the bottom of the pie.
He's swarming around the field.
Yeah.
And I was like, S.J. Green.
Yeah, this is a totally different thing, which is why I loved it when they were all back-to-backs.
Yes.
So what I mean by that is we're going to have the Banjo Bowl this week. I'm looking forward to it. We'll ask Westwood what that's like. Because I actually think the Banjo Bowl, Riders fans don't get mad at me. I think the Banjo Bowl is actually bigger than the Labor Day Classic.
I've been to a Banjo Bowl. And it is next level. You talk about double-double in Hamilton.
Yes.
Let me just say, if you go to Winnipeg, I've said this before, don't get mad. But it's like if you show up and you haven't had a drink, it's like showing up to the bar and you're the only one that didn't pre-drink.
Right.
It's got that vibe. And you're like, oh my goodness.
Yes.
This is really going down.
Well,
so loud, Donovan. Like, you cannot hear the person next to you, like, let alone if you're going with a bunch of friends, right. like, forget it.
Yeah.
You're not talking.
Interesting. See,
like, so loud.
And I think how much of that is because it builds for 2 weeks, right? You have the Labor Day Classic, and then you've got this return match, which is why I loved it when you'd have the Labor Day Classic in Hamilton and then a return match in Toronto the next week. Obviously, with the schedules the way they are, with an unbalanced league in terms of divisions and the amount of teams, it's tough to have return matches all over the place. So we have to keep the Banjo Bowl because it has a name. You can't lose that. But this brings me to the point that I want. If I was running for some sort of office, I would run off this platform.
Okay.
We need a 10th team for an excuse for us to go out east and have a great time and maybe, you know,
lobster.
Have some lobster, get stretched in, do the whole thing. We need a 10th team so that on Labor Day Classic, everyone has a dance partner. So that the Montreal-Ottawa rivalry is back in real form and that we can have this like transatlantic, cross-country, bi-coastal rivalry of BC playing the Schooners and the Schooners return trip to BC. And I even think, and Commissioner, if you're listening, feel free to take this, I think we need a bye week in between.
Right.
So that BC Lions fans can go out east and really have fun, make a vacation of it.
Absolutely.
And then the fans out east can go out west, really get some hiking in, go, you know, walk up a mountain and get some good fish on the other coast. And we could have these two like traveling fan bases in the heart of the season at the end of the summer. I think would be awesome.
I love it. I'm on board.
Okay, nice.
So
I've got one.
We'll pass that on. I'm sure he listens.
I hope so.
He does. Especially when there's three games, and I totally understand the whole bye week situation.
Yes.
But I know what you mean. And also those fans, like, they do feel a little left out. I've talked to people. They're like not in it so much.
Yeah,
they're not so involved.
You'd have to. The Riders fans didn't feel left out. What a game.
Ooh,
walk off winner. I just loved, I mean, obviously everyone's looking at the kicker and being like, oh, he's the hero. He's running away. He's just won the game. I was actually looking at the holder, who is punter John Ryan.
Okay.
Who has had a great career in the NFL.
Yeah.
Has come back and said, I want to be a part of this.
Okay.
As a Saskatchewan boy, I want to play in this game. I want to be excited about it. And watching him in his face through his face mask, taking in what is the Labor Day Classic in Regina, he doesn't need the money. He doesn't need the fame. To me, that's what was special about that scene.
Just anytime a game ends in that fashion, it just takes your breath away. Like, it's too exciting. And then you just want it to go well for the kicker. Like, honestly, like watching a kicker miss is one of the more painful situations in sports.
Oh, and Riders fans know.
They know.
They know what that's about. Unfortunately.
But I didn't even consider that.
Yeah.
And he's just looking around, taking in the scene, loving the vibe.
Yeah, you'd have to.
Savoring the moment.
In that moment, I wish I was John Ryan, right? Because, like, how many Labor Days did he make the trek,
right?
Up to Mosaic, you know, pre-gaming, as you mentioned, watching the game in those stands. Like, those are his football memories. His football memories as a kid weren't NFL Sundays. For many in that province, for many in this country, your football memories are watching the East Division Final or the West Division Final or the Grey Cup or the Labor Day Classic, wherever you live in this country. So John Ryan, for me, I was watching him and like, yeah, he was a kid again. If we're going to talk about Canadians,
yeah,
can I just selfishly give a shout out?
Always your show.
I mean, not. It's our show, but Johnny Augustine, everyone was worried about, my goodness, what's the Bombers running back situation going to be? Are they going to make it an American position, you know, while they're dealing with the suspension of Andrew Harris?
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Augustine's like, no, coming out of Guelph.
I run
the rock. 12 carries, 98 yards. In a loss, though, but look at the Bombers, who didn't have their starting QB in Matt Nichols.
Right.
Didn't have their starting running back in Andrew Harris. Still kept the game competitive.
Yep.
Now the East Division, or the West Division, it is super competitive with Calgary looking back in it. And then if I'm going to give shout-outs, I got to go back to the game in the East with another U Sports runner basically saving Hamilton. Selfishly, I love that Canadians are now getting an opportunity to play the position.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the starters, the guys that you spent draft capital on, the backups, the guys who have been featured on draft profiles by yourself, are saying, yeah, you know, we're not going to overreact. If we lose a Canadian at the position, there are more than one, two, three good ones. So shout out to the U Sports running back as the U Sports season gets started.
They work so hard, right? I mean, I think if you watch, if you're more of a casual fan and you're just watching week to week, you're thinking about the starters. Those are the guys you're drafting week to week, whatever. But all of these other guys are still working just as hard, if not harder. They're so hungry. And when they get an opportunity and then they shine, and they shine at home on a big game like that, like, it's magic. It's magic.
And I love the correlation between the legacy being passed, where one guy does well, it opens an opportunity.
Totally.
For another guy, Kwaku Boateng.
Yep.
Comes out of Laurier as a defensive end. Like running back, for a long time, wasn't considered a Canadian position, because theoretically Canadians weren't athletic enough to play it. Kwaku Boateng does well. So what happens? That opens up an opportunity for Robbie Smith.
Right.
Guy who you worked out with in the offseason to play. Gets drafted relatively high. Now he's playing really well for the Argos. I love the fact that, you know, Kwaku Boateng can thank Ricky Foley, and Ricky Foley can thank Brent Johnson.
Totally.
On and on. As Canadians do well in the position, it opens up more and more opportunities for Canadians. And so you're not in a situation where Canadians are just kickers, linemen, wide side corners, and slot backs.
No, it's amazing. And yeah, that season kicking off, they're like, all those guys reporting to camp like mid-August, right?
Yes.
Which is kind of brutal for them.
It is.
I know camp is like not so fun.
Well, I mean, you would know because you did like 10 training camps in one summer with the grind. Like, are you still recovering from the grind?
Still recovering from the grind. We're doing Grey Cup Fit Up presented by Sun Life. So I'm like all in on another type of exercise. But yeah, my brother played U Sports football for 3 years. So we used to have to say goodbye to him really early.
Right.
Because he played at McGill, defensive line. He switched over to baseball. So he still has to go early. But anyway, I will always have like such a special place for all those guys. DJ.
Yes.
Ideal game day experience. What does that include for you, my friend?
Great food, great friends, and the Argos on the television or in person.
I agree with most of that, I'm going to say.
Okay.
I got to have some pals, got to have some good food. But I think listeners need to have their own must-haves, okay? And actually, if you enter the Tackle Knee Pain Contest, you could create your own ideal game day. Okay? So people need to start thinking about what that would look like. Now, to our listeners, if you haven't experienced a game day live in stadium, or you're looking for the experience, which you have to do, come on now, you should definitely enter the Tackle Knee Pain Contest. You could win the grand prize of 4 tickets to a regular season CFL game and $300 towards team gear, plus $100 on food. This is like a dream game day.
Yes.
Yes. That's a bonus of the tickets. It covers your whole day except for your travel. Now, if you don't win the grand prize, there are 2 secondary prizes of $200 gift cards to use at your team shop of choice. To learn more and to enter, you can visit kneepainrelief.ca/CFL. This contest is open from August 26th to September 30th. There's no purchase necessary.
Got it.
With that backup prize, I'm going for the throwback that was on the sidelines this weekend.
Well,
the turf traditions. Let me tell you, I'm loving the turf traditions.
Well, with your marathon training, like, knee pain may be an issue, so you're
That's
all about
true.
This.
I am all about it. No knee pain yet, but like Pendo Farm, we need it.
Knock on wood. My other takeaway from Labor Day is, of course, Bo is back like he never left. My guy is 6-0 on Labor Day with the Calgary Stampeders. Calgary now tied for third with Edmonton, and they've already clinched the season tiebreaker. I love the fact that Bo missed games early. The injury looked pretty precarious. He was never missing this game.
Never. And didn't miss a beat.
No.
You would never know. Like, I'm just watching astounded. And I took a couple guys in fantasy, and I was like sitting on my couch, and as the game was starting, and I'm like, what am I thinking? Like, what if he's not going to the same targets? Like, this was a total miss. And I was just fine. Let me tell you, I was just fine.
There was a scenario where I thought, Calgary, man, they may get fourth. They may have to go through the East.
Right.
And I actually kind of love the thought of
you,
them.
You were thinking that far. You were thinking would get that bad.
Yeah. Because the West has been really good.
I know.
When you look at their two deep, I think they're the most talented team in the league. Winnipeg got off to this amazing start. And Saskatchewan just finds ways to win.
They've got that X factor. Yes. I don't get it.
Even when it's not pretty. So I thought of the scenario where could Calgary make the Grey Cup in Calgary as the visiting team? Like, is going through the East, would that be a thing? Like, would they have to change lockers?
Right.
And now I'm like,
it's not even a thing.
Now it's just a matter of time. They're going to win the West again because Bo is back and everything looks right again. And his connection with his receivers looks really, really good automatically as well.
And I shouldn't be surprised by that because he's Bo Levi Mitchell. Mm-hmm. Like, it was moronic of me to even question it, but I did. And it was all fine, particularly for Reggie Begleton, who continues to light it up week after week.
And he's got an interesting backstory. I mean, you trained with him, right?
I trained with him. So we went down to Texas to work out for the grind with Darrell Walker and Willie Jefferson. The focus of the episode was Willie Jefferson. And Darrell Walker happened to be there, which was awesome. Great. Then there was this guy, Reggie Begleton, who we kind of heard of, and he was kind of like a throwaway. Like, you know, he's going to be there, and we're like, oh, okay, well, he's a nice guy. We're, like, happy to have him. All good. And he is the nicest guy, let me say. He's, like, totally lovely and was working his butt off with these guys. He was driving, if I have this correctly, Reggie, you can totally correct me on all of this, but it was, like, an hour and a half, 3 days a week, just so he could work out with Willie Jefferson and Darrell in Katy, Texas. Home of Bo Levi Mitchell.
Right.
Okay. So Reggie tells me after the workout, because we're getting to know each other and want to know more about his story, he had rhabdo, which is short form for rhabdomyosis, I think.
This does not sound good.
People, if you haven't heard of rhabdo, it's really rare, but also really serious. So I'm reading from Google because I am not good at this stuff. It results from the death of muscle fibers and release of their contents into the bloodstream, and it can have serious complications, specifically with your kidney, like kidney failure. And it happens quickly. Like, if you don't catch it quickly, it can be really dangerous. It can be deadly. Like, it can kill you.
Right.
Reggie had rhabdo in that offseason, and the Stamps kept him on the roster, and he was battling back from this thing. The pictures of him, DJ, his face is swollen. Like, it looked like, in his eyes, like he'd been stung by like 100 bees.
Jeez.
He battles back from that, right? He starts to have some success last year with the Stampeders. They start to work him in more. And then he goes down with an injury last year, just as he's getting hot. Then he comes back this year. The kid's unstoppable.
Yeah.
I believe 5 touchdowns, 300 plus yards in the last 2 games.
Not bad.
He had 33 points in fantasy this week.
Pretty good.
It's really cool to watch players battle back from injury and illness and start to reach their potential.
Yeah.
Like, you never want to see guys not get to where they should be or could be because they've been injured or ill.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, and it's cool, you know, a guy who battled back from injury in his throwing shoulder throwing to a guy who's battled back from an injury. Now I understand why I don't know what rhabdo is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have any muscle fiber to die.
That's not true.
So I don't have that issue. Having too much protein in the muscle, not an issue for me. but no, it is a great story.
Cool. We got to talk to him about it. I think you guys need to interview him on the Waggle in a future week about it.
Yeah.
Or maybe get Chris O'Leary to write a story, because it really is a crazy story. And I'm not doing it justice.
Yeah. It's why I never really wanted to count out the Stampeders team. Mm-hmm. When people talked about everyone they lost in free agency and the fact that Bo's taking up a bigger portion of their cap and then he was injured. They have so many resilient guys on that team.
But did you think that the Eskimos were going to, I don't know, struggle? Is that too strong a word? Against them as much as they did. The Calgary defense was so good against the Eskimos offense.
Well, Trevor Harris, who I thought was just going to wrap up his MOP during the second half of the year.
Yeah.
It was going to be him or Andrew Harris. Now, I'm not sure if either of them are going to be the nominee coming out of the West.
No.
Season low, 216 passing yards against that Calgary defense. And Trevor Harris still has yet to beat the Calgary Stampeders in his CFL career. That's kind of a problem when you now play in the West for the other team in the province.
Right.
Yeah, I'm. We'll touch on it when we talk about the Leo Vegas odds, but I have no idea what to make of the West, because 1 week a team looks like they're world beaters. Another week the team looks like they're going to lose in the first round of the playoffs.
And traditionally, like in recent memory, the Eskimos O-line is second to none. And those guys, I think, are... We've got to get some stats and some odds. They're so big, like bigger than any other O-line, I think, in the league. Like, it's really crazy. But the Stamps D this week, an interception, two sacks, turnover on downs, and a goal line stand. So why did that offense struggle, or why did the Stamps defense hit them so hard this week?
Yeah, I mean...
And why does Trevor struggle so much against them?
It's crazy, because now... Because
other teams have had success. I don't get it.
Different teams, different... offensive coordinators in his ear, different players around him still struggle. I mean, listen, a lot of people struggle against Calgary, but his are so abnormal compared to the way he's just killed the rest of the league. And I also do think that Calgary lost some playmakers on defense over the last two off seasons, really. And they also lost their coordinator, Devon Claybrooks, who's now the head coach of the BC Lions. And so I do think, in a way, it's taken them a bit to hit their stride. But John Huffnagle, the reason why he lets people leave in free agency is because he's betting on himself to find guys in the summer in free agent camps and having guys that he likes on his neg list. And it looks like they've done it again in Calgary.
They always do. But my other question to you is, as someone who didn't play the game, talk to me about the Bristol boards on the sidelines of J.C. Sherritt. Is that for real? Like, what is that? They're trying to block signs because they think that guys up in the booth, they know what they're calling. But J.C. Sherritt played for the Eskimos.
On the other side of that rivalry.
I know they were talking about it on the broadcast, but it honestly felt so, like, I was being judgy.
So unnecessary?
Yeah. It felt like, I was going to say it felt high school, and then I was like, I don't want people mad at me, and I love J.C. Sherritt's, like, great guy. I don't want people being mad. But, like, what is that?
It is football culture 101.
Tell me football culture 101.
Well, always be skeptical. Like, that is like the name of the game for coaches. And it's to a point where it's gone way too far. It's one of the favorite topics of myself and Davis now that we've stepped away from it.
Right.
Like, really, Michael Shea, you're not going to give us any information on any of your players' injuries because we don't know that they're injured. Because we can't tell when a guy has two packs of tape around his left ankle that it's a left ankle injury, and you're just going to say lower body? Like, really? Like, what are we doing? Right? Honestly, when there's a guy who's injured and he's being worked on by the trainer, you're literally going to have six guys perform a little wall around him so that we can't see what's being worked on, as if we don't have seven cameras filming and we can see the replay in slow motion in 4K what he injured. And so to me, this is just the next phase, the next variation of that. It's the same as why Chris Jones was crazy about
next level.
What media was at practice? Was where? Remember when the Grey Cup was here in Toronto?
Yeah,
he didn't want to stay on the script on where the team was supposed to practice, which we need to know as media.
Right.
The Rogers Centre, which is a very big building, which has people coming through it all of the time. He's worried about who is in the suites at the top. People had to identify themselves to him. It's crazy. Mark Trestman,
was famous.
The same, if not worse.
Doing walkthroughs in parking garages. Like, yeah. Okay, so I kind of love the drama around it. It just cracked me up, but I was also like, this is really where we're at.
Well, it just...
looks so stupid.
You're also spending so much mental and physical energy worrying about something that if you just took that and channeled it elsewhere on your team... you'd be better off. But this is where we are in football, where teams literally, and we see this a bit in the CFL, see it a lot in college football, look at a sideline, you'll have two backup quarterbacks sending in signals, and you'll have another guy holding up Bristol board again with faces on it. There'll be in the CFL, there'll be a Brody Lawson face on one, there'll be a duck on another, there'll be a loony on another, and you have to decipher what that means. Yeah, it's just stay paranoid. Is the football culture. Stay paranoid in terms of you are always afraid you're going to lose your job to someone else. You're always afraid some other team is going to get your signals or get your plays or your sets or your tendencies.
And you might disagree with me on this, but if there are players and coaches listening, and I know they do because you guys hear from them, DM me and tell me if we're the ones being crazy. Like, if there is so much happening behind the scenes that we don't know about and you're listening to this rolling your eyes, like, I want to know. You don't have to be specific, but, like, give us a window into what's happening because it looks ridiculous.
Well, why don't we just take this opportunity to ask the players themselves? Next up on the podcast, you're going to have a conversation with Dylan Wynn. Then when we come back, we'll do some Leo Vegas odds coming up next on The Waggle.
I'm joined by Hamilton Tiger Cats defensive tackle Dylan Wynn, who is coming off a monstrous Mark's Labor Day weekend. Big win for the Cats. And Dylan, a pretty incredible August for you. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing very well. You guys are on your bye week this week, so I'm always curious what guys get up to. Where are you and what are your plans? Other than what I saw on your Instagram, which is some selly hip swiveling.
Well, right now I'm actually in the facility. I'm in our lounge, you know, getting a little treatment, a little hot tub, a little cold tub, and, you know, just getting my body back to base level. So I'll be hanging out in Hamilton for this bye week.
You are. Okay. And where are you from? I see on Instagram again that you're often in California, but are you also in Oregon?
No. So Oregon, I went to college in Oregon and I haven't been back there actually since my last game. I was born in Texas, moved around a ton, but right now home base is Benicia, California, which is Bay Area, North Bay, right at the top of the Bay. So
what a gorgeous place to live. We've been down there a bit to film The Grind. We were around there actually with Simone Lawrence. It's such a beautiful area.
Yeah,
that
I love
Bay
it.
Area is awesome.
The weather's amazing. You know, you can't really go wrong.
So, but you're very into like fishing and hunting and all of that. So where do you go to do that?
I do a lot of outdoorsy stuff. My wife hunts a lot. So there's a lot of waterfowl in California. Fishing wise, in Benicia, I actually can fish in the bay. You go to Sac River. In the off season, I work on a ranch in Rio Vista, my buddy's ranch, his grandfather's ranch, and we do a lot of outdoor stuff there. So Rio Vista is east, and it's definitely a more country area. When you think California, you don't think cowboys and that kind of outdoorsy stuff, but It's a pretty diverse state, and if you go anywhere, and especially in Rio Vista, it gets a little outdoorsy.
That is so cool. What are you doing on the ranch when you're working? Like, and does that count as your dry land? Like, you're a very big guy.
Yeah, we run something like, I think peak season, about 2,000 head, which is like, so a head is a cow, right? And
okay.
So about 2,000 cows.
I did not know
and
that.
yeah. Sorry. Bit of a work lingo. But yeah, so what we do is we run a ranch that it has. So cows are like dogs in the way that there's different breeds, right? So we'll run Angus and Herefords, which are two different types. They're typically beef cattle, and we'll raise them from. We breed them basically and raise them until a certain size, and then we sell them to other people. So we finish doing whatever they want with them. And so we are dealing with a lot of baby cows, and that's our job. And they are a handful.
You and your wife look like you have so much fun. Out, you guys are always fishing and, I don't know, outside. It looks like a time. So, and I know she's a teacher, so she's back to school. They go back to school earlier, though, right? So she's already settled and...
Yeah. She's on her week now. She's a second grade teacher, and God bless her. She has the patience of a saint.
All teachers do. Bless all of them. Oh, my goodness. I'm thinking of everyone back to school after Labor Day this week. It's such a fun time. But... All right, my friend, let's move on to football. And leading into Mark's Labor Day weekend, there's always a ton of talk about rivalries. And my friend and co-host at the CFL, Davis Sanchez, always says that rivalries are for fans, not for players. And yet, Dylan, the game between you and the Argos was so heated right from the beginning. How can you not tell me that this is not also amongst the players? What was going on? What was the smack talk? What was happening?
Well, I would have to agree with him at the beginning going in. You know, you want to treat it like it's just another game and it's just the next one. But, I mean, there was something in the water for sure because both teams, we came out swinging.
Is it the fans that get you fired up? And at Tim Hortons Field, they're like so much closer that you can hear them. Is that part of it? Because you've played on both sides of this.
Yeah, and the fans are huge, but it's not quite that. It's just something like you hit somebody and they hit you back and everything starts to escalate. And next thing you know, like it doesn't take much to really get a lot of us heated. We're all super aggressive players, and they are the Toronto's team's aggressive team. We're a super aggressive team. I think that this team is one of the most hard-hitting teams I've ever played on. And we get after it. And when you get between a rock and a hard place, and it keeps escalating, and it turned into a great Labor Day classic for sure.
You, as I mentioned, also played for the Argos. So you've played on both sides of this rivalry, but you're not the only one. Donovan and I were talking about how many Argos, former Argos there are, currently playing for the Tiger Cats. The list is extensive, including your head coach, including Jim Barker, and then a ton of players because we were in Chris Van Zyl. The list goes on and on. Because a lot of people want to stay in this area once they're here, it seems like there's a lot of more guys kind of that flip between these two teams. Does that create any more animosity because you all know each other better?
A little bit for sure.
Okay.
So I was going against Campbell most of the game, and he was actually my roommate a couple years ago. And
come on.
Oh, yeah. So, I know all those guys. I won a Grey Cup with them. And we have a lot of guys that have come down to QEW and joined us here. And, I mean, you don't want to get shown up by old teammates at all. And so it definitely adds a little pepper into your hits.
Well, it looked like it. So I just wanted – I just felt like for – as usual, I'm watching the game, and I'm like, this is not just a rivalry for the fans. It just felt like that. So I'm glad I wasn't wrong.
no,
9-2.
I always say that with friends, like, yeah, you want to hit people that you don't like, but it's about respect, and you want to hit the guys you played and grind with even harder. You know, you want to give them the best that you got, and it just turns out into a good game. So it's kind of a weird mentality I have, at least personally, but if I know you and I'm friends with you, it makes me want to hit you even harder.
Well, Donovan was describing it like a sibling rivalry. And I think that's true. You respect your sibling. You love your sibling. But you're also like, I'm really going to give you everything I have for that exact reason.
Yeah, definitely. But at the end of the day, also, they are the Argos. We are the Ticats. And, you know, there's bad blood there for sure. So it's just a mixture of everything. And at the end of the day, you got to win Labor Day.
And you did. So you can go into a bye week chilling. So 9-2 for the first time in 21 years. What is the mood like in your locker room? Or what was the mood like in your locker room, I guess, since everyone's kind of gone home for the week?
Yeah. I mean, it's positive, but it's also our feet are on the ground and we understand we can't put ourselves into those kinds of situations and keep making all these games close. A win's a win, and at the end of the day, that's all that matters. But when we look at the film and we start to break it down, we just got to keep tight stuff up later part of the season, and everyone's making their dashes for their playoff berths. So we're taking it week to week and just, you know, trying to tighten the screws, and eventually we're going to play to our standard on all three phases, and we're excited for that.
Now, Mark Washington's defense has been described as attack-oriented. How would you describe it?
It is. I think that's just the mentality of our whole team is attack oriented. I don't think it's just the defense. Mm-hmm. Coach Washington is very, very good at what he does, and just the schemes that we have, and it's a fun defense to play in. Everyone gets a shot to be that playmaker, and if you do your 1/12, eventually you're going to get the chance to showcase what you can do, and everyone on our defense is a highlight player, and that's what makes it so much fun, is we all gel together, and we all celebrate together, and we all get to get those big hits.
You have had 3 coaches in less than a year, if I have done my math correctly. Is that right? With the Argos, and then down in the States, and then back at Pierre. What is it? What challenges has that posed for you, and what's it like to play for Coach O? I am a big Orlando Steinauer fan.
We all are a big Coach O fan. He's a genuine guy. The guy that you're seeing is the guy he is, and he's so consistent, and he doesn't lie to people. And that was a big part of why I came here, is you know who he is as a man. You can see how he conducts himself, and just little things that we do around the building. Like he'll tell you to like write a thank you card back home to somebody, you know, and take the time to thank people. But when we come down to it, we have our same goals, the same meetings that we've had since training camp. And they're really the foundation that we build upon to become the team that we want to be. And that consistency is amazing for a head coach. And it's also rare. I've played for a lot of coaches, and I wouldn't say I've had any challenges switching, but you learn a lot from going different mentalities, and everyone's trying to win. And it's super interesting to see just how differently people go about it, and like what highlights for certain teams. But it all comes down to the same thing for championship teams. It's you got to have people buy in, and you buy into the mentality, and you buy into what your head coach is selling you. And then everyone gels together. Every time I've been in a successful winning locker room, it's because the men in the room hang out off the field and become friends and become close.
And you feel as though that's the case in Hamilton.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's not offense hangs out with offense, defense hangs out with defense. We're all in this together, and we're all a big family here.
So I know it's challenging at times for players to talk about themselves, because you always want to defer to a team.
And as someone that
covers football, I understand that nothing happens without the team. And I know listeners also get that. But for you, I mean, this season personally has to be something special. I know you're still in the thick of it, but you've got 9 sacks right now. You're tied with Willie Jefferson for 2nd in the league. My understanding is that's the most sacks you've had in a season, like at the end of a season. And you've hit that mark in September. In fact, I think you hit it in August.
measuring
by sack totals alone is obviously not the way we want to judge play, but that's got to be a pretty nice spot to be in and know that your work has really paid off.
Yeah, I didn't know I had that many, so that's awesome.
You didn't?
Yeah. No.
You have 9 sacks, and I think you had 6 sacks in August. So you and Willie are tied. Charleston Hughes has 12, so you're not far off.
Well, those are some good names to be compared to. I'm just, you know, I don't pay attention too much about that stuff. I'm just a normal guy that gets to play football. So I just go to work every day and try to do the best I can and detail my jobs. And like I said earlier, man, like on this defense, everyone gets their chance to be the star and shine. And I guess I'm just living right. Things are going well, and that's kind of how football is. And I'm just lucky to be on this kind of streak, I guess. Someone said I've gone a few games in a row, so feeling good about it. I got a defense with monsters on it and a D-line that knows how to hunt. And I mean, they can't double team all of us. So.
And when the spotlight is on you, you don't miss an opportunity to celebrate, which at CFLHQ, we very much appreciate. Was it the Tiger Woods celly a few weeks ago after your sack? Is that what that was? For fans that didn't see this, it was like a fist.
Oh, gosh. And not pump, bump. No, pump. Dave
has
made fun of me
because
I could never say it.
There's a story behind that, actually.
Well, we need the story. That's why we're at. This is what the waggle is for.
Yeah. So the Tiger Woods thing, my dad and my brothers and like a bunch of the guys in my family, every year they have a golf tournament called the DHI, and they go somewhere and they, for a weekend, and there's a trophy, everything, and it's something that they made up. And that weekend was the DHI. And so my dad called
me
before.
Oh, and you missed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I never actually
I guess you always miss it. I was going to say.
Yeah. So I'm not that good at golf at all, actually. I barely can do the driving range. But my dad's always, since we were younger, you know, it's a kind of the thing of the family. So he's like, eventually you're going to play in the DHI and blah, blah, blah. But for that weekend, because they're all out there and they all rent a house and all of the guys stay in the same house. So they're watching the game. And before that game, my dad's like, you know, if you get a sack, you got to give a shout out. You got to do a golf shout out. Got to do something. So that's what that came from. Like, I put no thought into it at all. I don't think about my celebrations. That one that I've been doing, you know, I'm an idiot and I think it's funny. That's really why I do it.
It's a scene. It's a scene.
Yeah. So it's, I did it. I think the first time I did it was last year in Toronto one time. And it either got like super good, like people were like, oh, check it out. Or people were like, what are you doing? And, you know,
what does your D-line think of it? What does your D-line think of it? Does your D-line love it or hate
funny.
It?
Yeah, I love it. Okay. I think so. They make fun of it. So it's, you know, I'm just here to have fun. The less I can think about that kind of stuff, the more I can focus on my job, you know. So I guess that's the default now. That's kind of what I'm going to keep going back to.
Okay, well, I love the story behind the Tiger Woods celly. That's so great. And also tough to think of a golf celly, but that one's so iconic. We got it. So good work.
Yeah. And for Celly Showdown,
awesome.
Keep the
thank
Cellies
you.
Coming.
We totally did. Dylan, thank you so much for chatting with us today. We really appreciate it. Enjoy your bye week. We look forward to many, many Cellies to come.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Bye.
All right, that was awesome. Brody talked to Dylan Wynn. Really good insight. And basically that, listen, I don't want to talk to you, Donovan. I want to talk to Brody. She works out with the players. She virtually is a player. Get out of here, you media type. So now, based off of all that insight, let's break down who we think is actually going to win the Grey Cup, or at least get there. The reason why the Banjo Bowl is so fascinating is it's basically a game for first place in the West. The Bombers are at 8-3. The Riders are at 7-3. And so all of a sudden, with Calgary back in, the West is wide open, and thus the league is kind of wide open. Here are the lines brought to you by our friends at Leo Vegas. I'll go through them all, and Brody, pick one team that really, really stands out to you as good value, as a team that you think could win the Grey Cup.
Okay, let's hear it.
So coming from behind right now, Toronto Argonauts and the BC Lions, who both have one win on this season, are 100,000 in terms of odds. The Ottawa Redblacks, 4,000. And now we get into the contenders. Montreal Alouettes at 850. Edmonton Eskimos at 500. Calgary Stampeders at 400. They've been climbing as we've done this periodically throughout this season. The Hamilton Tiger Cats at 350.
Okay.
The Saskatchewan Rough Riders are 325. And the Winnipeg Blue Bombers still at the top at 280. So I'll go first.
Yeah.
There's one team that jumps out at me here. Actually, there's two. It's right in the middle, right? Not a crazy long shot like BC Lions. Sure, 100,000, that's great odds, but you're just wasting your money. BC Lions are not going to win the Grey Cup. Watch them replay this when they win the Grey Cup. Really, the good value is in the middle. It's with, for me, Hamilton at 350 because they're running away with the East. They're going to host the playoff game. Mm-hmm. So basically, at that point, they're two wins away. They got to win two games in a row in November to win the Grey Cup. So 350 on that, sure. The other is Calgary at 400. You're giving me better odds than the Riders and the Blue Bombers. I think Calgary is just as good. Mm-hmm. And now that they've got Bo back, let's be honest, I think they're kind of better. I think the fact that Bo Levi Mitchell, am I afraid that he may have another issue with the shoulder? Yes. But do I love the fact that the rest of his body has been resting for this entire time? And now he goes into the second half of the season feeling like he's going into it coming out of the offseason? Yeah. So those are the two that jump out to me. What say you?
I agree with you on Calgary. That was the one that jumped out to me. It feels low. So it feels like if you're placing a bet, then I would roll with it. But I also think the Eskimos, that would be my other thing. Like, they're just ahead of the Montreal Alouettes. Granted, they've got a much more challenging road through the West, which I think, to your point about the Ticats, like, well, that's probably the smartest way.
Will they go through the West?
Right. Or do they cross over?
Yes.
I hadn't even considered that when I thought about it.
Because I like them more if they cross over, to your point.
I like them more too. And are they not just as good a team as the rest of those West teams? They've just struggled here and there.
Yeah. I mean, when they're right, they're as good as any, if not better.
And healthy.
Yes. And
for the most part.
And what's their weakness? I don't see one. Receiving corps great. Two good running backs. Great defensive line that's been playing lights out. Their defense has been among the tops throughout the year. Yeah, I think in a year where they struggled, obviously, last season and missed the playoffs, I think Edmonton to go from out to winning it is a good number. Listen, Winnipeg.
500, that's not bad.
That's great.
Yeah.
Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, could they win the Grey Cup? Of course they could. But it's relative to the odds where I'd rather take some of these teams in the field and get a little bit more value on my money.
Always.
But, I mean, we'll do this again in a month because these things change so often. Those are our Leo Vegas predictions, but who knows? Make sure you go to leovegas.com to see where the odds are because they're changing all the time and place a bet. So Brody, this interests me because as a new dad, I'm also a new car owner. And so I really love that until October 26th, you can score a free pair of CFL regular season tickets when you buy a set of four BF Goodrich tires at Cal Tire. Tickets are valid for any city and can be used in either the 2019 or 2020 CFL seasons. Might be 2020 for me as all day I'm spending time with the little guy. But no matter, check out caltire.com/CFL tickets for all the details. Cal Tire, proud to be the official tire retailer of the CFL in partnership with BF Goodrich, the official tire of the CFL. Now, it gets random. This is Objectional Conduct. We end the podcast every week where I just throw some random stuff at Davis to see how he reacts. So I'm happy I get to do this with you. And let's start with, well, it was Labor Day weekend, right? So we're honoring the fact that people work hard and so take some time away from work. What is the worst job you've ever had?
Oh my God. I was a nanny.
Okay. I can see why that would be tough.
There were some rough moments.
Okay.
It can be lonely.
Yes.
Kids can be tough.
They can.
Yeah, that was tough.
Okay.
Okay. Right.
I was a hydro meter reader.
No.
Yes.
That's bad.
In university. I mean, listen, it's a good way to make a living, but it's like in the summer, it's hot. You have to wear these like steel-toe boots, getting like chased off of properties by dogs. But there were nice moments. Some ladies would wait like to the day. They knew when you were coming. They'd have the lemonade for you and stuff. That part was nice. But yeah, it wasn't easy. So shout out to all the hydrometer readers
no kidding.
Out there. I mean, now it's probably just digital, but I was literally going in the side of your building through your shrubs trying to find your hydrometer to write down whatever your hydro score was and being like, ah, that's pretty high. This is probably a grow up. Next. So you get to go from stadium to stadium to work for the league and on the TSN broadcast showing what fun, you know, Thursday night games can be.
Yeah.
What's the best stadium food you've come across?
Oh, my God. So this summer I got to try the Creole poutine, mm-hmm. Creole poutine in Montreal. Mm. And usually when I do those segments, I'm like, I'm just going to have a quick taste and then like put it aside. It's like, I've got a long night, finished like the entire thing by myself. Same with the porchetta sandwich at BMO Field.
Okay.
I was like, I'm just going to have a quick bite. It's like, no problem.
Got it.
Entire thing gone. I will say there's nothing I've had that I eat and I'm like, that's gross.
Good.
It's like good. All good.
Okay.
And though I, you know, stay fit and Grey Cup fit up, I like love junk food. Like, I live for stadium food. It's, like, so selfish that I do these segments.
Well, no, that's why you do the segments.
Yeah, it's, like, a so genuine interest.
You're allowed to. You're buying the credit physically so that you can then spend that capital eating stadium junk food.
What's your go-to?
Stadium
food? Yeah, stadium food. Like, do you go and get a hot dog?
I mean, sausage.
Okay, so this is why I'm asking.
Hot dog.
See, I would only pretty much go for a hot dog.
Some sort of peasants? It's a sausage all of the time. Shout out to Italian sausages. You know what I like? I love, and this is more of a movie thing, but I'll get it at a stadium. I love popcorn.
Really?
Yes, I love popcorn.
I do too.
The buttery flavor of popcorn. Like Steph Curry, my favorite basketball player, partially because he has a rating for the best popcorn in every NBA arena.
Really?
Yep.
So when does he eat it?
He eats
post-game? It. Post-game?
Post-game, pre-game. He'll walk out with like huge bags of popcorn that he'll have. And he has a rating based on flavor, based on temperature, based on butteriness, based on saltiness. And I there are a lot less CFL stadiums than there are NBA arenas. I endeavor one day to have my own ranking of stadium popcorn. But I'm a big
Why don't we do that? Guy. Let's think about that for, you know, the second half of the year here.
Brand partnerships. If you're listening, talk to, I'm not going to say any names because I don't want to hurt your leverage. Talk to a popcorn sponsor. Let's get this done. All right. Other thing I like really now.
Yeah.
I love watching tennis. I'm love all it. In on the U.S. Open. I mean, you look like you are a tennis player. So, of course, your serve and volley game, I'm sure, is very nice. What I've noticed, though, again, astute, tennis players, they all have one phrase that they scream.
Yes.
Come on. They all scream, come on. Like after a big point, a break point.
Yeah.
Tennis players who don't speak English scream, come on. Like this is the universal thing that every tennis player screams, which brings me to follow me, because this is not making any sense for most, which brings me back to football, because this is a football podcast. You're in the gym with players. You're on the sidelines with players. You're here, the guttural grunts.
Yes.
What is the universal football cry, battle cry, the scream that you hear the most often?
How many times did you hear this in your gym as a kid?
I don't know.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's go, boys! Let's go!
Where are we going?
It's constant. It's nonstop.
But why does that happen? Like, how does that happen?
I don't know. And you know what? It doesn't make a ton of sense. And you're right. It does become like the one phrase, like it's kind of unique to sport.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's go. I can't do it in a deep enough voice.
Yeah. Like soccer.
But it's a good thing. It's a bad thing. If they drop the way too early, it's a let's go. If like I'm struggling with something, it's like, sometimes they'll throw in your name. That feels really special.
Mm.
It's always let's go.
Yes. Like soccer, I think it's get in. Like get
yes,
in,
that's
like so
true.
Get in the net, or like get in on a challenge.
Yeah.
But it is let's go.
I ski raced.
Okay. Ooh.
What
is it in ski racing?
So when you ski race, when you're in the gate before you go, they scream up up.
Up up.
Up up.
Up up.
And you'll see like their first few pushes out of the gate. That's what they'll say.
Got it. I just.
That's a really good question.
For me, if I ski raced, I would just apply Cool Runnings, and I was just like, Eins, Vines, feel the rhythm, feel the rhyme. All right. So the other thing that Labor Day means, back to school.
Yes.
Kids going back to school. You see the little kids in their outfits.
And for everyone starting university.
Yes.
Have a time, guys.
That school as well. It's not as cute as kids holding, you know, their little
lunch boxes.
Yeah. And their little starting kindergarten today thing. You know, everyone on Instagram has their kid on the front step with their little outfit.
Are you going to do that?
I mean, I've just made fun of it. So I would be a hypocrite if I did. But let's be honest. Like, I probably will.
It all goes out the window when it's you, right?
Because everyone thinks their kid is the cutest kid in the world. And I'm guilty of it as well. But bringing us back to school.
Okay.
Everyone does their little back to school shopping, their clothes, your little supplies. What was the back to school item that was purchased by the Lawsons for young Brody that she was the most excited about?
New lunchbox.
Really?
Yeah. Because I was so into, first of all, let me just say, and this might shock no one, very into the back to school shop. Super organized as a kid, kind of dweeby, like hung out with the teacher a lot on recess, like not a cool kid.
You had a scientific calculator in like grade two. Probably.
Terrible at math, needed it, like necessary. I was in tutoring for math all the time. But to get a new lunchbox, because your lunchbox was so filthy by the end of the year. Like it was just rancid. And to get to start fresh with that and knowing that like you were putting it in your bag and there was nothing like leaking from it. It was just clean. This is getting gross. But like lunchboxes are vile.
Interesting.
What was yours?
I'm gonna go with a nice Hilroy binder.
Oh my God, how badly I wanted a binder for so long. And remember when you first got to use pens?
Yes, that was nice. And I loved the pen.
And we're missing new shoes. That was also the best part.
Yeah, yeah, shoes are great. I wanted shoes all the time, not just for back to school. I loved the pens. I don't know the brand, but we know the ones, the white and blue ones, where you had like the multi-choice colors. Mm-hmm. You want to go green, which who needs to write in green?
No.
But that was an option. But you had the black or the red, which were the real options, or the blue. Just click it down. You got a different color. You got a whole new pen. But for me, it was the binder because, especially when you don't take care of things like me. So around February, you know, the binder's not the same. Your little three-ring papers are all ripped at the sides because the binders are no longer in line. Mm-hmm. They're all mismatched, going all over the place. You're cutting yourself, trying to open it. So to be able to start fresh and have a binder that just clicked in nicely, open nicely, put those pages in, that loose leaf in well. Yeah, for me it was a binder. And some binders were cooler than others, right?
Yeah, like did you have a zippered binder?
No, it was Velcro.
Velcro's cool too.
But some had more padding than others, better colors.
But you and I were on opposite ends of the spectrum. Like I was the kid that had the little like stickers to like re-put together the paper so that it would flip nicely. Like I wasn't cool. It was like a lame situation. Very organized.
But look how you turned out now.
I love this time of year. So cool.
Yes. Yeah. This has been cool. This has been fun.
Thanks, DJ. Thanks for having me. This was great.
No worries.